noon AM 950, Progressive Voice in Minnesota. Doug Padgett in 4 o'clock to 5 o'clock. It's what the Brett, it's what the kids call drive time. I don't know if you've heard that, but that's the big phrase on the streets.
That's what the kids call it. All right,
kids call it.
Hashtag that on Instagram or whatever they use, or Snapchat.
I wonder what they're WhatsApping that thing from their bus, saying like it's drive time because the bus is heading home. I referred to yesterday as the high holiday for parenting when your kids finally get to go back to school and be loved and cared for by school teachers who do great work.
Who's going back this week? I thought most Minnesota schools don't go back till like after Labor Day. At least that was when I went to school in the Southwest Metro.
You're showing your old school colors there, my friend, because they have been sending people back to school now for the last 4 or 5 years in many of the districts, including Minneapolis. It's a big, large school district. This week, the week before Labor Day, so it's people on both ends going this week and then starting after Labor Day.
That used to be a big thing.
Yeah, I remember that. I remember as a kid that thing that like Labor Day. It was a rule. It was a law. It was built into your summer schedule that you would not go back to school until after Labor Day, and it had, I don't know, something to do with, I always thought it had to do with the state fair because I didn't know anything as a kid. I thought like that the rule was you couldn't start school if there was still a fair to go to.
I like that rule.
Yeah. I'm not exactly sure why I thought that, but I guess because, you know, it was after Labor Day, fair ended and then school started. So I thought those two things must have been connected, but no, they're back at it. The kids are back already. And at least in parts of the Twin Cities, they're back. Are you going to the fair, by the way? I don't think we've talked about this. Are you going to make your way out there?
I only go once every few years. Too many people for me, but, you know, it's still a fun thing to go to. I went, I think, was it 2016 was the last time I was there. So, mm-hmm. I don't know, if a bunch of friends end up going, I should say, maybe I'll head out there next weekend or something. But no plans as of yet.
Yeah, I'm sort of that same way. I'll end up out there if there's some reason I have to go. But I'm not going there as the reason I have to go. And that's the difference. My fair going friends and family, they go. Actually, my sister runs the karaoke, station inside the big food court out there. So if anybody gets out there and they see, Dee Dee and Mia's karaoke, and I should know this because it's a family business, karaoke or karaoke. Still don't know. Stop over and say hi. And it's one of the great experiences at the Minnesota State Fair. So if you go for any reason, you should at least stop in and see Dee Dee and Mia and what they do out there. It's really a great thing. So occasionally I go out to see them or something else, but I'm not a fair goer. And this political season, I'm kind of missing out on that. I'm already going to be gone enough. I know that there's nothing in my schedule that'll allow me to get there by next Monday. So, no fair for me. But boy, I bet the political atmosphere out there is just on fire right now. I bet the campaigning that goes on and the people with their booths and the people with their stickers. I think the campaign fever, around this country has never been higher.
I agree. Yeah, it would be interesting to see the candidates out there. And you just wonder, after so many days of standing out there, if they ever just get sick of people and just end up coming across as not as friendly towards, you know, that Saturday, Sunday, Monday, when it's suddenly like, all right, I'm kind of sick of this now.
It has got to be in their mind every day, like, don't make this your news moment. Don't make today your news moment.
And they're thinking the constituents, don't ask me a dumb question.
Yeah, and let me just say this to every candidate or public figure, anyone for whom your photo would be taken and shared with others, anyone, stay away from the corn dogs and the pronto pups, because every time a famous person is eating one of those, somebody gets a picture of it and it shows up. And I'll tell you, nobody looks good stuffing their mouth with a corn dog and a pronto pup at the state fair. It's, if you've never thought about Googling that, just Google celebrities or politicians eating a corn dog at a fair and you will see that person after person just looks utterly ridiculous. Cause you know, while it's a great way to eat, a hot dog, dipped in either corn batter or in some sort of a wheat batter, it's a tasty treat. It's not very becoming. It's awkward at all possible levels. So,
and to take this at an old school level, I'd say, yeah, you don't want your Michael Dukakis moment out there with the helmet. That's kind of what it's like.
Hey, and politicians, if someone says, hey, climb in my tank, you say, no, thank you.
And you never wear a helmet. No, never wear a helmet if you're a politician.
Never try to look cute. Like, oh, isn't he adorable? Hey, speaking of politicians, those Republicans in the House of Representatives are a little nervous. You know, there's this big story that came out the other day. Axios put it out about congressional Republicans preparing themselves for not only not being in power, but having to be conscripted into, I think it's like 100 investigations into the Trump administration and behavior. Something like this, and they're nervous as can be that they're going to lose control of the House, and there's going to be a big flip not only in who's in control, but what's happening with all of these investigations, and it's going to be bogged down by investigation after investigation.
Yeah, they are starting to fear this definitely. In fact, I talked a little bit about this yesterday, how Axios actually got some insider emails of Republicans already predicting what Democrats will investigate them on should the Democrats retake the majority next year. And a lot of these controversies I kind of forgot about. So it's an interesting list to look at if you have a chance over at Axios.
Yeah, it's things like Trump's tax returns, of course, the Trump family business, the criminal syndicate that it is. Trump's dealing with Russia, of course, but then also things like the James Comey's firing and Trump's firing of other U.S. attorneys and Trump's proposed transgender ban, the Treasury Secretary Steve Mnuchin and his business dealings, the White House staff use of personal emails. How do you like that? There's going to be a congressional investigation into people's use of personal emails.
Yeah, how fitting. Lock them up.
This is one I think is really important. Classified information and how it interacts at Mar-a-Lago, Trump's little spot down south that he keeps up for vacation purposes. All of that kind of stuff is up in the air. Now, I am one who has been advocating for Democrats and citizens alike to advocate for the impeachment of Donald Trump if indeed he is found to have committed impeachable offenses. And I think he has already committed multiple impeachable offenses. But there's a process by which that is determined, right? There's everyone, including the President of the United States, deserves his day in court and deserves the full support of Congress to give him the benefit of the doubt, to find him innocent until he's proven guilty. But you have to look into charges. So I suggest, you know, a lot of people do, they should be talking about impeachment, looking into issues of impeachment, because there's enough to indicate, like if you were some sort of a criminal investigator, it looks like there was a crime committed here, right? That's a thing. So I think you should look into it. But as it turns out, and I heard this really interesting conversation today, that Republicans are the ones talking about impeachment and trying to gin up the idea of impeachment, because they think, these Republican strategists and some of the Republican congresspeople, they think that if you can scare Republicans into believing that if Republicans lose control of the House that Trump will be impeached, they will come out to vote in the midterm election in order to save President Trump, that there's enough people, a big swell that will come out. And so people are saying to Democrats like me and to other impeachment oriented thinkers, hey, don't bring up impeachment, because that's just going to startle the Republicans, and then they're going to come out because they really want to save Donald Trump. You know, this idea, this is a big one. This is something that people talk about all the time. Here's my thought on that. There's not enough of them to even make a difference. Like, in all honesty, the number of people who are just enraged and newly enraged by Donald Trump and by the actions of this administration, there's nowhere near enough like apathetic Trump supporters who wouldn't come out unless impeachment was on the docket to overwhelm that. So I think, don't worry about that at all. That's not a thing to be concerned about. Lean in hard and say to people, there's one day that you can do something about Donald Trump, and that is November 6, 2018. Every other day is preparation for the day you can do something about it. And we should call November 6th the Do Something About It Day. And I know there's others. They think, you know, there's something more going on. And there's all kinds of things I think that we could be pushing this Trump administration toward some kind of deep investigations. So I like the idea of there being a number of investigations and see if any of them lead to what I'm afraid is the conclusion that Donald Trump has committed impeachable acts. I think he has, and I know a lot of other people do too. But that needs to be adjudicated in the in Congress and then in the Senate.
I don't know about you, but I would just feel that these investigations they're going to do, as you said, into personal emails or Trump's use of his personal cell phone or sharing information in Mar-a-Lago in the open, those are the ones that I think are really going to bring him down more so than like the James Comey or any investigation like that, because it's pretty serious offenses to be sharing classified information out in the public, out in the open at Mar-a-Lago, where all you have to do is basically bribe a waiter and you could probably get some inside information about what Trump was talking about with nuclear weapons.
Oh, isn't that interesting? Unbelievable. Hey, Paul from Edina, you've got a little thought about President Donald Trump and military investigations, huh?
Yeah, I was thinking earlier last year, those soldiers that were killed in Niger as a result of us pulling our support out of there as a direct order from Trump. I think something like that needs to be their Benghazi. I really think those soldiers, their death is incredibly sad, and it's been buried.
Yeah, Paul, I so appreciate that comment and that call. Thanks. I'll tell you, hearing you say that, it struck me. I have forgotten all about that. Isn't that amazing? That's one for the callers. That this is what happens. All this new news comes flowing in all the time, and forgotten all about the fact that the choices of this administration put men's lives at risk in the military, and they ended up dying because the support was pulled out. Hey, Paul, thanks for that call. Hey, we're going to be back and talk about the local implications of all this, especially in the races that are alive here in Minnesota. So AM 950, Progressive Voice of Minnesota. Stick with us here over this rainy, sloggy afternoon.
Join New York Times best-selling author William Kent Krueger for A Night of Intrigue and Mystery on Tuesday, August 28th at Common Good Books. Krueger will read from his next entry in the Court O'Connor series, Desolation Mountain. It's a punch-to-the-gut novel about a father-son team working to uncover the truth behind the tragic plane crash of a senator and the mysterious disappearances of several first responders. That's William Kent Krueger at Common Good Books in St. Paul on Tuesday, August 28th at 7 p.m. Visit commongoodbooks.com.
Tom Hartman here, letting you know how you can save money with All Energy Solar. One of the myths about solar is that it's too expensive and you need lots of money down. The truth? Solar is available for little or no money down. And if you have a great site for solar, you might even save money right away on a monthly basis. So don't wait to switch. You'll see your investment pay off the sooner you switch to All Energy Solar. So start saving today and visit allenergysolar.com.
Connections Radio Show is all about tapping into our hardwired hunger to connect. We examine meaningful connections to ourselves, our community, and the world around us. By opening the door to innovative insights by a wide variety of interesting guests, we'll make the connections to something bigger than ourselves. Join me, Lori Fitz, your host of Connections Radio Show, and together we'll make the connections. Saturday mornings at 9 a.m. on AM 950, the Progressive Voice of Minnesota.
At Burger Mo's, Mondays no longer need to be a drag. Dine on the beautiful patio for Burger Monday Madness every Monday after 4 p.m., where you can order any burger and fries off menu for just $6. Not valid on Excel event evenings. Burger Mo's offers 20 fresh, never frozen burger varieties, as well as delicious appetizers, soups, salads, and unburgers, dogs, paninis, shakes, and desserts. Located at 242 West 7th Street in St. Paul, with plenty of free parking, and online at burgermo's.com.
Atheists Talk is the radio show for free-thinking Minnesotans. Listen on Sunday mornings at 9 o'clock. Every Sunday, we bring you science, philosophy, politics, and plain old fun from an atheist's point of view. Visit our website at minnesotaatheists.org for more details. Tune in to Atheists Talk Radio Sunday mornings at 9 o'clock on KTNF AM 950, the Progressive Voice of Minnesota. It's good radio without the good book.
Minnesota has a lot going on this summer, and I don't want to miss a moment of it. However, my carpets remind me of the good times later. That's why I call Zero Res. I'm not willing to waste a beautiful summer weekend washing rugs, so don't worry, because the carpet cleaning heroes at Zero Res can help. So schedule your cleaning today by calling 952-ZERO-RES, or you can book online at ZeroResMinnesota.com. Don't forget to ask for the special AM 950 listener pricing. Zero Res, spell it backward or forward. It spells the same.
Let the broken heart stand is the price you've got to pay. It's a great line from Bruce Springsteen's song. Hey, speaking of broken hearts, you know, when people decide to run for office, Brett, that's they're really setting themselves out there. You know, they're putting themselves out with that same kind of, as I mentioned, a couple of the people running this fall in the primary. It has all that emotional energy and emotional fear that you had in junior high when you wondered if people were going to like you or not. Right, but it has great consequence because you're going to be their elected official. So it's a big deal when somebody steps out and says, "Vote for me, not for the other person," and then we're going to let everybody know if you picked me or you picked the other person. That's a gutsy move on behalf of any politician.
It is kind of like junior high now that you bring it up. It's a popularity contest, just like it was always big in school. Who's the most popular? That's essentially what it is when you run for any elected office.
I know, isn't it funny? Like at some level, and it kind of feels that way. You know, sometimes if people are, especially if they're not politically, if they're not policy or partisan driven, right? If they're the kind of voter that says, I don't know, I vote on different things, and I don't really know, then it really does become that sense of do you like the person? Are they somebody you want to vote for? And I think too many voters, I'll just make this slight comment, I'll bring it up more as we get closer to November. I think too many voters, their vote is more of a personal expression than a tool of democracy. And I like to encourage people to think about their voting as a tool of democracy that's going to have consequences and actions. And on behalf of whom and on behalf of what outcomes would you like to place your vote, right? I think that's a better way for someone to take their voting obligation. But a lot of people are just like, I don't know, I like it. I remember when I first started voting, I was like 18. And I was in the voting booth, and you could vote for judges. And I can't remember. It felt like the kind of thing where you could pick two or three. For some reason, I thought you couldn't vote for all of them, but there were different ones. So at least ones I decided to vote for, I always voted for people that had the longest name. That was the level of input that I had for it. You know, how many letters were in their total name? it's like somebody tried to pass one of those tests by always circling C and just hoping they're going to get there. I'm like, well, at some point, the longest name person probably is the right one. Right. And as you get a little older, you start to develop your own criteria for voting. But whatever it is, whether you just like the person or not, you're putting yourself out there. And I bring this up partially because there's a nice little article in the Star Tribune today about the rematch between Jason Lewis, who still is our congressperson from the state of Minnesota, which just is heartbreaking to me, and Angie Craig, who, they were in a big election 2 years ago, as is the case for congresspeople. So, and this headline reads this way: in a rematch with Jason Lewis, Angie Craig seeks stronger connection with voters. Right. So because she lost the election a couple of years ago by only 7,000 votes, she is now mounting her rematch and has decided to talk to more voters and not just Democrats. She's going to get out there and try to engage all of them. And I think that one, and also in the Dean Phillips campaign, that he's trying to take a different approach, which we can talk about in a minute. But I think with Angie Craig and with Dean Phillips, that both of them are trying to get out and connect with more people. And I wonder if it's going to work. And Brett, I'm interested in your thoughts on it. And I'm a big supporter of both of them. I'm going to be running an event. In fact, invite everybody to it now on October 10th. This project that I'm running called Vote Common Good, where we're touring the country. Vote Common Good is going to be coming here to the Twin Cities. And we're going to have an event we're inviting both of them to participate in it. It's going to be a big concert kind of turnout event. So really want you to know about that. So I'm supportive of both of them, but I'm wondering if this approach of more contact, is going to pay off. What are your thoughts on that, Brett? Do you think this ability to reach out, reach across, connect with more people, do you think it produces actual different level of turnout or different level of votes?
I don't know how you could scientifically measure this, but I want to go back to what you said, how so many people vote on, well, just who I like the most. Or I remember hearing this a lot during the 2004 Bush election. Well, I thought I could have a beer with him. And unfortunately, I just think so often, at least when I make my political predictions, in more who I think will win rather than who I want to win, it almost always seems like whoever is more likable will almost always win. So I know you and I are both political junkies. A lot of people who listen to the station are political junkies. We want to go with whoever has the best policy. But unfortunately, I think most of the time is whoever is comes off as the nicer of the candidate or who comes off as more personable usually wins. So going to that point, I think it's a good strategy by Dean Phillips to try to appeal to everybody. And the same thing with Angie Craig, where I think looking at her campaign in 2016, she kind of just did a lot of sitting back and relied a lot on, well, just saying, well, look at what Jason Lewis said in the past. Look at what Jason Lewis said in the past. Look at his radio career. That seemed to kind of be her strategy, and she seems to be kind of learning that lesson and saying, hey, I got to engage more with the people, because even though it'd be nice if we voted for people who would represent us better, I think so often we just end up going with whoever is the person we could have a beer with, so to speak.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I get it. And this is the funny thing about our form of government, right? Is that especially in Congress, we have our Congress people are they're called our representatives, right? And they're elected every 2 years. And by, you know, the organizers of our political system, this was by design, as opposed to the senators, who are not called a representative. They have a higher minded goal to represent policy, and the reason they're elected every 6 years rather than every 2 years is because their ideas need longer to germinate, and they need to work in a different kind of flow and a different kind of pattern. Now, I don't know that the founders of the country really anticipated population growth across the country and having it based on the number of Congress people you have being represented by the amount of your population. But now we have a huge, you know, 538 Congress people, House of Representatives, and you know, still our standard 100 senators. So there's this whole lot of Congress people that are representatives. But the thing I think you're bringing up, Brett, that's so interesting is, as a representative, that you're supposed to be held really close to the voters' appetites, really close to the voters' whims, that's the side of the government that is going to be changing quite often. That was by design, where the senators and the president are not going to be changing quite as often. But it's almost like by design, it was meant that you represent me, so I need to vote for you based on these, like, I like you and you seem to represent me well, and kind of short-term and immediate issues. So maybe one of the things we have to do, and this is a tall order, is to ask people to think about their votes for different offices differently. Right? I know that I've just made voting even more complicated for most people, which is probably not a good idea because it might keep them away. But let's just say that the more complicated nature didn't keep them away. Wouldn't it be great if when you went to vote, you were thinking, oh, I'm voting for my congressional representative right now, and knowing that a congressional representative is going to be elected every 2 years and is going to be closer to the population and has a smaller constituency than does a senator, I'm going to place my vote for this person based on this set of criteria. But when I'm going to vote for a senator, I understand what a senator does, and I'm going to choose a senator differently than I'm going to choose my congressperson, and then I'm going to choose a president because I know what the president does. Now, okay, this is like political fantasy world here. But if we were able to do that, I think we would all end up electing people differently. We would recognize what kind of person should be a congressperson, a representative, what kind of person should be a senator, what kind of person should be a president. And then we would be able to recruit people into those roles. Where right now, it just all seems like it's politicians and we vote the way that we vote. Do you know what I'm saying? So it feels to me, and one of the things I'd love to do with this show is help people kind of think about how they're going to think about who they vote for, right? Not just what to think about and what the topics are, but how and why do they think this person would make a good representative, or this person would make a good senator, or this person would make a good attorney general, or this person would make a good governor. I think they're really different questions. And for so many of us, it just becomes, are you a politician? it's like referring to people as a scientist or an artist. Well, yes, I am a scientist, but that means that I study biology. Or yes, I'm an artist, but it's because I paint watercolor. It doesn't mean I'm an artist like a musician. So there's all kinds of different politicians in this world. And I think it would really make a big difference in voting if people were to consider such things. So anyway, okay, there's a little civics lesson and a little civics hopefulness about how we'd engage in the future. So I'll stick with us here over the break. We know it's a cloudy, rainy day in the summer out there. But Doug Padgett, we'll be back here after the break.
Hi, I'm Dr. Scott Chambliot from Chambliot Family Dentistry. We're the fear-free, get-you-out-of-pain-now dental office.
And I'm Rachel Chambliot. Did you know a lot of people are afraid of the dentist? You don't need to be afraid of my dad. He makes going to the dentist comfortable and even fun.
We don't care if you're a dental regular or haven't seen a dentist in years. We just want to make you comfortable and get you out of pain.
If you don't see my dad, please see another dentist. Take care of your teeth because they're the only ones you get. Call 1-800-FIX-MY-TEETH or visit fixmyteeth.us.
Tune in for Philosophy Talk, the program that questions everything.
Except your intelligence.
Coming up, the athlete as philosopher.
Being an athlete means cultivating virtues of loyalty, collaboration, and discipline.
It also means cultivating feelings of rivalry, tribalism, and obsession.
So which is it? Are sports a way to find ourselves, or are they a way to destroy ourselves?
The athlete as philosopher, next time on Philosophy Talk.
Philosophy Talk, every Sunday at 8 a.m. and again at 2 p.m. on AM 950.
Tom Hartman here telling you that solar energy isn't just for environmentalists. Switching to all-energy solar is actually perfect for reducing your carbon footprint while also saving money on your monthly electric bill. The fact that solar panels cause no earth-harming emissions while it's producing energy is a bonus. Who in the world could object to that? But they can also help you save money month after month for decades. And they do it with a clean footprint. So go green and start saving money today by visiting allenergysolar.com.
Hi, this is Paul Metza inviting you to listen to the Wall of Power Radio Hour every weekend on AM 950. We are now in our third year of broadcasting on the Progressive Voice of Minnesota. MinPost has called us one of the 22 most independently entertaining and cool radio shows in the Twin Cities. We feature cool people from all walks of life and from all 50 states every Saturday at 6 p.m., replayed Sunday at 4 p.m. on AM 950, the Progressive Voice of Minnesota.
It's grilling season and Vinaigrette has some sizzling recipes to inspire you. How about summertime grilled fajitas? Just create a marinade with our golden balsamic or champagne vinegar, a chili garlic or jalapeno olive oil, and marinade beef or chicken. Add red onions, red, green, and yellow peppers and throw them on the grill. Or try grilled steak brushed with our truffle or garlic olive oil. Visit us at 50th and Xerxes in South Minneapolis and 287 Water Street in downtown Excelsior or online at vinaigrettemn.com.
The number one source of the Twin Cities gay scene is All Digital. Follow Twin Cities Gay Scene on Facebook and Twitter. Sign up for the Scene Shot email blast for weekly updates and chances to win great prizes. No app is needed to view the bi-weekly web editions of Scene. It's GLBTQ media for the mobile generation. Find it all at TwinCitiesGayScene.com. That's TwinCitiesGayScene.com.
With your AM 950 weather, I'm Brett Johnson. Look for cloudy skies tonight with a low around 54. Wednesday sunny with a high near 71. Thursday sunny with a high near 76. And Friday cloudy with a high around 78. The Downtowner Woodfire Grill is the Eat Local Minnesota restaurant of the week. It's the perfect choice for breakfast, lunch, and dinner 7 days a week. Their menu is considered American bistro with lots of delicious options, including fresh wood fire pizza and daily seafood specials. Located at 253 West 7th Street in downtown St. Paul. More at downtownerwoodfire.com.
Hey, welcome back. AM 950, Progressive Voice of Minnesota. Talking about some civic-mindedness here and how we approach all of this. And we're going to talk a little bit about the great Minnesota get-together at the State Fair. And a new thing popping up here at the State Fair. The old coming back and showing up at the State Fair. But more on that in a minute. Hey, Lawrence, you've got a couple of thoughts here about civic-mindedness yourself.
Yeah, I did enjoy your spiel. But the bottom line is, it's way too difficult to comprehend. Here's a simple solution.
Okay.
And I think we should do it this way, that you should require a civics course for graduation from high school. And it should be set up such that it is no way you can pass it without actually having to study. So they have courses now that you just can't cheat and you can't do a cliff notes on it. You actually have to study, and they set the test up where you actually have to know what you're talking about. So if you have a civics course for a requirement for graduation, I think that might never put us in the situation we're in now.
Lawrence, that is such an interesting thought. Thanks for that. You know, I like this idea of getting people when they're in high school, because that's where you really have to start. But I also wonder if we should all take it as our responsibility, and people in all media, people in all the entertainment field, to not just put the burden only on our educators about helping people understand civics when they're 18, but to embed our civic mindedness, as you say it, that's a great phrase, our civic mindedness into our broader cultural communication patterns. Yeah, a couple of years ago, I was walking through the mall at Southdale, and on the places in the middle where you would look to find where a store is, and it would just give you the map. Those are often three or four sided little walls there. And on one of them, there was a couple of questions. It asked some questions. Who was the star of this movie? Who won this sporting event? Who did this other sort of famous pop culture thing? And then the fourth question was, what's your child's teacher's name? And then it said, if you don't know the answer to the fourth question, go home and ask your kid. And it was some, hashtag-y like campaign that was parent engagement. The point being that there are some things in our society that people just know. They know how it works. They know how it functions. They're really involved in it. I mean, heavens to Pete, we figured out how people could fall for Donald Trump by watching him on a reality TV show. And so all the kind of ability that we have for people to understand our media and our entertainment, if we were to turn that, if we were to commit as a society to turn that to paying attention to what our civic engagement is, I think to reinforce your really good idea about some civics courses by the time they get out of high school and they have to test to a certain level of proficiency, what you really want to do is keep educating people by all the ways that we educate in our society, being much more creative about it. Many of us now carry around digital devices, phones and computers and iPads, and there could be a way that we take really seriously the communication of what the civic responsibility is. So I'm a big fan of education, and I've benefited from it and want it to continue and want to champion it. But I also think that in addition to that, we have to support through the rest of our society and culture what it means for us to learn our civics. So one of the things I think should happen, put a point on this, I think that everybody running for public office, especially federal office, because it's there's a way you could fund this at the federal level, that every candidate is required as a candidate who's running to do voter instruction, civic engagement, in order for people to understand the civics process. That if it was made mandatory, that if you are a registered candidate for a particular office, that in your campaigning, you have to spend a certain amount of money, and this could even be given by the federal government, but in the same way that radio stations and TV stations have to provide some sort of equal access for the public good, you could say to every candidate, what you have to do is to be engaged in civic instruction, and especially at the presidential level, the millions and millions and millions of dollars that are spent on candidates, and almost none of it is spent on civic instruction and civic understanding. So I think that you're on here, Paul, with this idea that what we want to do is to instruct people and getting them to a base level coming out of high school, but then we should use the existing communication, entertainment, media, and political structure to help with civic understanding and civic teaching. I think every congressional office, every Senate office should have to have an ombudsman, a liaison, a staff person whose job it is to be sure that you're doing basic engagement and understanding for people who live in this country about what the civic engagement is. I think it should just build it in, make it a requirement, and say, this is something that you have to do and you have to report out on. on that and how you did it and how much money you spent. And I'll tell you, any candidate that does a good job of helping people understand our civic structure, any candidate that helps people understand our civic engagement, they're going to end up having more votes anyway. What would move this, make this effective is that that person would become valuable to their constituent because they help them understand the process. So I think there's some real things that we can do in our society to help not only the teenagers and elementary school people understand civics, but you know, for people to learn this in a really kind of fun way. Like I know more about how Progressive Insurance does its insurance because of the Progressive Insurance TV commercials that I watch than I know about how that I've learned ever on television about how the civic situation functions, or what's the difference between a congressperson and a senator, or what are the roles of a president. I mean, people literally run for president in this country. They say, vote for me, and they never even tell you what all of their official secretaries, the people in their cabinet, do. That should be like, you shouldn't be able to figure out who to vote for as a candidate without also knowing what the interior secretary does. It's possible to communicate that to people in our society and across the system. So I love this idea about a civics course, and I'd love to extend it all the way out through our society so that people start learning. And so if people get their minds working on this, maybe you'll come up with some good idea. Maybe there's some sort of a business proposition in this. And ask businesses. Look, if we could say to businesses, get us to the moon because NASA doesn't want to do it anymore. Couldn't we say to businesses, engage in the civic engagement or engage in the process of people learning their means of civic participation? I don't know. Seems to me that that's doable. Hey, Mark from Fridley, how you doing? What's your thoughts on civic mindedness today?
Hi, Doug. I think the role of a civic minded person is to find accurate information and. You have to understand what's going on is that basically the media's job is to make certain you don't know what's really happening.
Uh-huh.
And if you go back in history, there's a quote that says, education is dangerous. Every educated person is a future enemy. And that came from Hermann Göring of the Nazi Party.
Yeah, that went dark in a hurry.
Right. Well, no, but it is all dark because people that are fed disinformation, misinformation, you know, they can't make an informed decision. And,
sure,
you know, they
sure.
have to open up their mind. We've lost the capacity for critical thinking and intellectual curiosity.
Mm. Right.
Get to the point. What's that?
Yeah, that's right. And not or if we haven't lost it completely, we've lost it according to or as it relates to issues that seem so important to our civic engagement.
Right, and you were, yeah. you know, for example, the way that the media on both sides is handling the death of John McCain. Does anybody really look at what John McCain's actual legacy truly was? I mean,
people
if
on
you're
Breitbart
going to
did.
Give him, what's that?
The people on Breitbart did because they can't stand the guy and they've been tearing him apart for days. The hard right wing.
I'm seeing people on MSNBC praising this guy and calling him a hero.
A national treasure, I heard the phrase this morning. A national treasure. Heard somebody in MSNBC
hardly.
Call him.
If we look at the sins of John McCain, and again, I'm just...
Oh, I hear you. I see where you're going. You're saying that civic-mindedness also has to have the proper level of knowledge and understanding, and that it's being covered up very often, not only by our government, but also by the media that needs to keep access to the government flowing so that they become part of that flow. Is that right? That's the
you know,
critique.
And we don't teach civics or social studies in school anymore, nor do we actually teach history, because if people looked at, and again, I'm a veteran. John McCain is a war criminal, not a war hero. I understand he was in Vietnam. I understand he got shot down. But, you know, if you look at totality, he was involved in the Jack Abramoff scandal. He was involved in the 1980s SNL scandal in Silverado.
He has been
the biggest pro-interventionist war hawk, global war hawk. He's largely in part, you know, in great deal responsible for the wars that we find ourselves in and buried under.
I agree.
And, you know, we get the media that's saying how wonderful this guy was, but, you know, just do a little bit of homework on what this
well,
guy's
hey, here's the good news, Mark.
Truly
and-
is.
Here's the good news that people like you are out there, and you do a good job of keeping me informed on this stuff and other listeners here. There's a lot more to know than people know that they could know. So I like the fact that that you keep our attention on those important topics. I would add that in addition to knowing the details of the struggle, that people knowing how the system works is really important, and whom they should vote for under what circumstances, I think is also really important.
I like what you just said, knowing how the system works, because I have a couple of friends that don't vote because they say, well, it doesn't make a difference who I vote for, because they only think about the presidency. They don't think about Congress. They don't think about the Senate. They don't think about the governor. They don't think about the state legislator. They just say, well, the president doesn't make any difference in my life. Why should I vote? And they just don't know how the system actually works.
Yeah, and very often we don't even know how what the president does affects our lives. There's a lot of us who think it just doesn't even matter who the president is. I just keep saying, like, oh my gosh, it so matters. I remember back in the day when I was a kid and Schoolhouse Rock came out and they were doing like little song education. I know it's at a very basic level, but you could extend that outside so that people, especially going into elections, would know. Like, spend the next 2 years schooling up our whole population on what it means to vote and why you vote and how you vote. I think it would make all the difference in the world. But for now, we have to do all the other important things, and that is get ourselves into some commercials so you can find out that Hunter Haas is not going to be stuck washing his rugs on a fine weekend like this one. Hey, we'll be back here after the break. AM 950, the Progressive Voice of Minnesota.
Well, a doctor comes around here with his face all bright.
I'm John Peterson, and at Ferndale Market, we are proud to provide our free-range turkey to local restaurants and natural food stores. One of our partners since the beginning has been Birchwood Cafe, and we're excited to announce a new partnership product, the Birchwood Turkey Burger Patty. Made from their popular turkey burger recipe, using our antibiotic-free turkey and Birchwood's local and organic ingredients. Put an end to bland turkey burgers. Find this and all our Ferndale turkey products at your local co-op or natural food store. Visit ferndalemarket.com.
Guess who called me the other day? You did. Hi, Mark Sommerfeld of Computer Revolution in Roseville. I want to thank AM950 listeners who called to thank us for supporting the station. So here's an offer exclusive to 950 listeners. Bring your broken computer or cell phone to our Roseville store, say I'm an AM950 listener, and you'll receive $20 off any repair. Computer Revolution with Cell Phone Repair, located in Roseville at Highway 36 and Fairview Avenue, or call 651-633-6600. And thanks. Oh no, you shattered your cell phone. Now what? Listen closely. We know you're lost without your phone. Bring it to Computer Revolution today. We'll fix it and have you back online before someone asks, "Where are you?" Computer Revolution with Cell Phone Repair has over 18 years experience fixing computer devices, all brands, all carriers. Computer Revolution with Cell Phone Repair, located in Roseville at Highway 36 and Fairview Avenue, or call 651-633-6600. We fix phones, same day, 7 days a week.
Waking up is easy when you look forward to breakfast, served 7 days a week at the Downtowner Woodfire Grill in St. Paul. Try eggs your way with hash browns, bacon, or sausage. There are four delicious varieties of Eggs Benedict that should not be missed, and buttermilk pancakes, waffles, or French toast are always fresh off the griddle. How about a Bloody Mary or screwdriver from the bar? The Downtowner Woodfire Grill is located at 253 West 7th Street with plenty of free parking, or online at downtownerwoodfire.com.
Minnesota has a lot going on this summer, and I don't want to miss a moment of it. However, my carpets remind me of the good times later. That's why I call Zero Res. I'm not willing to waste a beautiful summer weekend washing rugs, so don't worry, because the carpet cleaning heroes at Zero Res can help. So schedule your cleaning today by calling 952-ZERO-RES, or you can book online at ZeroResMinnesota.com. Don't forget to ask for the special AM 950 listener pricing. Zero Res, spell it backward or forward. It spells the same.
Hi, Matt McNeil for Rudy Luther Toyota. With summertime here, my family is super excited about the road trips we'll be taking in our Toyota Sienna. We're going to be putting a lot of miles in, but a Sienna is the most comfortable way to drive. Plenty of room for the five of us to stretch out and enjoy the ride, even with the dog and all of our gear tagging along. Safety and reliability are key, and Rudy Luther Toyota Siennas are the most safe, most reliable vehicles we've ever driven. Test drive one yourself at Rudy Luther Toyota, the southeast corner of 394 and 169 in Golden Valley.
Hi, I'm Dr. Scott Chambaud from Chambaud Family Dentistry. We're the fear-free, get-you-out-of-pain-now dental office. We always offer a free exam and x-rays for new patients because we believe you shouldn't have to pay to find out what's wrong with your teeth. Call today. We're open early and late and Saturdays to fit your schedule. As my daughter Rachel says,
if you don't see my dad, please see another dentist. Take care of your teeth because they're the only ones you get. Call 1-800-FIX-MY-TEETH or visit fixmyteeth.us.
There's bodies floating on canal and the levee's gone to hell. Martha, get me my 16-gauge and some dry shields.
Hey, welcome back to AM950. A little song called How Can a Poor Man Stand Such Times and Live. If you're looking for something to watch on YouTube tonight to inspire your heart, look up How Can Poor Man Stand Such Times and Live from Bruce Springsteen playing at a festival outside of New Orleans in 2006 after the devastation of Hurricane Katrina. It'll inspire your heart for what this country can do. Hey, Brett, you sent over this nice little article that kind of shocked me from the city pages. And the headline in the article is, if you're wearing a Confederate flag T-shirt, you don't deserve cheese curds. Which I think is probably just a general true rule, I guess, that somebody who's shouldn't be cheese curds with a Confederate T-shirt. But in this case, it was of particular note because apparently at the Great Minnesota Get-Together, people are wearing Confederate flags. Someone put on Twitter that they had already seen 5 Confederate flag shirts at the Minnesota State Fair on one day. And that raises a question about, you know, what's going on? What's the bounce back to this Confederate icon of the flag? And what's it doing roaming around the Minnesota State Fair? Like, look, everybody goes to the State Fair, you know, unlike the two of us, you know, who go when there's only an occasion, but everybody who goes on purpose or for an occasion, you think about what you're going to wear to the fair. Like not only because you want to know how you're going to look, there's just a lot of considerations when you go to the fair. Is it going to rain? Are you going to be hot? Do you want a collar? No collar? Do you want sleeves? No sleeves? Like, no one goes to the fair and goes like, oh, I had no idea what I was wearing when I went to the fair. Right? Everybody knows what they're wearing. It's on purpose that you wear the clothing that you're wearing. So it seems to me if somebody's wearing a Confederate flag shirt at the fair, that was on purpose. What's going on with that?
Absolutely, it's on purpose. And as the piece on City Pages we're talking about kind of points out, if you're from Minnesota, why are you wearing a Confederate flag shirt? Minnesota was not even part of the Confederacy. Not saying that if you're in the South, well, that justifies you wearing a Confederate flag shirt. It goes to something deeper. Why are you wearing that? I mean, would someone wearing a Nazi shirt, for instance, or an ISIS shirt? I don't see the difference.
I have a friend who had a favorite band like a hard rock. What are they? Like a screamer band. Do you know what I'm talking about? Whatever that style is, a real aggressive band. And it was called ISIS, and it was really disappointing for them when that name also became that of a terrorist band. So maybe somebody could end up wearing an ISIS shirt for the band.
Anthrax too when they were scared of their name for a while.
That's right. Anthrax. Who's going to wear an Anthrax shirt? So unless it's your band, but even in that case, if it's your band and it's a Confederate flag, I have a friend who fronts a Tom Petty cover band called the Petty Thieves. Greatest Tom Petty cover band name I know of. And he has a famous, he has a song he likes to do, and he does it when they do their concerts, because he said that he heard Tom Petty and saw a video of Tom Petty, who had the rebel, that whole like rebel musician thing going on, you know, back in the 80s. And people at his concert would throw Confederate flags up on the stage because they used it on their album cover. And Petty stopped a concert before he played this particular song that my friend used to introduce this, and says, this is why it's my favorite Tom Petty song. And he picks up the flag and he stops the crowd and he says, hey, we don't do this no more. We don't do this no more, and throws the flag and then plays this particular song. And he marks that as like there was a time when Tom Petty had to say, look, I woke up to the fact that this Confederate flag means things that I didn't know that it meant, and I should have known, and I don't want it to mean those things in my life. So we're not doing that anymore here with the Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers Band. We're giving it up. So I get the fact that somebody might stumble into possibly not knowing what the Confederate flag is. I guess that's still possible.
That's still kind of hard to believe to me in this day and age.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think it's probably a stretch, but there might be that, you know, I don't know, that one guy that fell into a coma in sort of the late 50s and, you know, just given a one-off possibility. Do you remember the Dukes of Hazzard, however?
Well, it was before my time, but yeah, I remember the Dukes of Hazzard, but.
Well, that car. Right? Had on the roof, and kids played with it. I played with the Dukes of Hazzard car. Like somehow it was sneaking back into culture, this flag. And to your point, I don't think that's possible now. So what I think is worth raising about this this article in the City Pages is this is how it comes sneaking back in. And I'm not saying that we should whitewash the past. I'm saying we should take it full faced and say this is what the Confederate flag meant. This is what it said, and this is why we don't use it anymore. You know, colors and symbols really matter, just as human beings and in our society. They matter. That's why people have uniforms. That's why we are road signs. Drive with a kid down the street sometime, down a highway, and ask them to name the number of signs, shapes, and colors. There's a really sophisticated road system that has to do with signs, colors, and shapes. Because as human beings, that does something in us. This Confederate flag business, it's not just I'm remembering my old heritage. Because, you know, I think about your question, who wears it? A lot of people go to the fair, I guess. Maybe some guy from a place where the Confederate flag still carries its old meaning and he wants it to be, as the case. Maybe he's not a Minnesotan. But even if he isn't, or even if he is a Minnesotan and thinks it carries something for him, I agree with the writer of the article that I just think the state fair is not the place to wear it, especially. Like, I think with some people, we still do have to have the argument and the conversation and the debate about the role of the Confederacy and the Confederate flag in our society. I wish we didn't have to have that argument. I wish it was settled law. I wish we knew it. But there's a lot of things I think that's about. There's some things I feel like in our society. Seriously, is this still a thing?
Mm-hmm.
But when it comes to that flag, yeah, I'm with you. I think, and I think we should engage people when they're wearing it. If I were at the fair and saw somebody wearing that, I'd say to them, "Hey, this seems like an interesting choice. Why are you wearing the flag? What's going on there?"
And just because you tell them not to wear the flag, or you ban the flag, or ban Confederate statues, that doesn't mean you're whitewashing history. The history is still there.
That's right.
We don't forget about World War II because we don't have Nazi statues standing up or around. We still remember the war.
Good point. The conflict between the Confederate flag and cheese curds. Where else do you get this conversation other than 4 to 5 o'clock?
What a turn, yes.
what a turn. AM 950, Progressive Voice of Minnesota. Thanks for sticking with us and being a part of the show, folks. We really appreciate it. We'll talk with you tomorrow.